I actually went into this season thinking, this is my senior season. This is the last year I get to play with these girls. I'm going to be loose, have fun. I'm not expecting to transfer anywhere big. I just want to have fun. And I want to perform at the level that I know how, because I've worked so hard for it. And I think that helped so much. It ended up working out so well because I was loose and I was having fun.
Hey, I'm Ashley Agle. Some of you might know me as Ashley Burkhart, and I'm a former D1 and professional softball player who spent a few years coaching in the college game before deciding to put all of my focus into youth softball players and helping them make their dreams and their goals happen for them. It's our job to help them unleash their potential and become the athletes they've always dreamt of. I come from a small city in the Midwest and didn't let that stop me from making my goal of playing D1 softball a reality. No matter where you live, you have the tools to help you thrive, and I am hoping through this podcast to help you get there. On this podcast, you'll learn from Olympians, Hall of Fame coaches, and elite players what their journeys have been like, and you'll also learn from me and my family a bit of our journey through the game. I'm so excited to have you here, so whip out your notebook and let's learn how we can grow in this game together. Welcome to When the Cleats Come Off. Welcome back to When the Cleats Come Off. Today's guest is a powerhouse player making her way to Georgia softball this fall after competing and loving her experience competing at Coastal Carolina, where she happened to win the Sun Belt Conference tournament her senior season. She never dreamt of leaving Coastal, but they didn't have exercise science, which is what she wanted to continue to study for a master's. Kirsten has been softball obsessed since she was little and growing up in Northern Indiana. Unique things that you need to know about her is that she lettered in 5 sports: softball, soccer, basketball, track and field, and golf at Lakeland High School. And not only did her Coastal Carolina team win the Sun Belt Conference, she was also named on the all-tournament team. She balled out her senior season, which is exactly why Georgia had to get her on their roster and compete in the SEC this fall. In our amazing conversation, we talk about what it was like playing for her dad growing up in Northern Indiana and learn a bit of their car ride home conversations. We learn a bit of her positive transfer portal journey. I feel like we only hear the negative ones, and why she made sure academics was at the forefront of her decision. Why she's an advocate for kids playing multiple sports, how she's overcome multiple knee surgeries and a shoulder surgery, how she's navigating recently learning that she has type 1 diabetes, but how she now feels stronger than she ever has since this diagnosis. Why she chooses to run a mile every day, she's crazy, even though she hates running, and so much more. Kirsten is so inspiring and I am in awe of her, and I can't wait for you to get to know her in this episode. So let's welcome her to the show. Kirsten, I'm so excited to have you on today. Welcome to When the Cleats Come Off.
Hey, excited to be here.
This is going to be fun. So I did not realize that your hometown is literally right down the street from me, like within an hour. I didn't learn this until I was watching your TikToks and I'm like, dude, she's literally my neighbor. But can you describe to me like what it's like growing up in the Midwest playing softball? I'm sure your experience is a little different than mine just because I'm older, but.
I mean, different, but probably the same. I feel like growing up in the Midwest it's fun because we have this such tight knit community. I don't think a lot of people get to experience that when you grow up in a big city, or even a lot of people get recruited out of California. I don't know if it's the same, but I feel like the community aspect of everything is just, it's hard to fail when you have everyone rooting for you. So I love the Midwest and the community behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people think that because we're in a cold state, you know, we get all the seasons here. We get a real summer. It is hot. It is hot, hot. Like, I think the high today is 86. Sometimes it's hotter. You're in Miami, so it's a little different. It's probably way hotter there right now. But we get a hot, we get a fall, we get a winter where negative degrees is like a normal. But a lot of times people are like, well, if you can't practice outdoors all year, you're behind. Why would you disagree with that? Because I think you're on the same page as me here.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly disagree. I think it adds a bit of a challenge that we have to overcome. And whenever you overcome a challenge, I think it automatically makes you tougher in an area. You have to do things and overcome things that some people don't have to do. So we have to go out of our way to find an indoor facility, which for me was like 45 minutes away. And that's just more to the dedication of doing something, because if there's a will, there's a way, and there's nothing going to stop us. And some people would let that be an excuse. But I think that's how you kind of weed through the good and the great, is people who have no excuses.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to play college softball your whole life growing up?
Yeah, pretty much ever since. I feel like 11U was when I knew I wanted to get serious with it, but I've been playing since I was like 3.
Yeah. Did you play baseball first? I did.
I played T-ball, so I count that as softball. It was with the baseball, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's funny because now I have a 2-year-old and I'm thinking, like, when does T-ball even start? But, like, how did you start at 3? Were you just, like, hit in the backyard? Like, do you have siblings? What was that all like?
I think we just had these little local T-ball leagues that my parents put me in. And I have these pictures on my phone of me, like, cheesing in my old T-ball helmet. It's huge on me. And, yeah, just started playing from there. And then I remember playing for, like, a local league. And then my dad made a travel league. And I feel like that's kind of the typical story, is like dad starts a team and then we go to a bigger team and dad takes a step back type of thing. Was that the same with you?
Very similar. My first travel ball team, I think I started when I was like 11. My dad was the assistant coach. He was not the head.
Yeah.
But yeah, he coached me for like ever, and we would train at home all the time, you know, when I started getting like really serious about softball. But yeah, it started off that way. But, you know, I don't know about your experience. I'd love to hear it. There's a lot of dads who start teams and it's all about their kid, and they could honestly care less about everybody else. But I feel like your situation's probably not that way, because you have a great head on your shoulders and your experience has been great in softball. Because I see a lot of dads who start it and like their kid ends up hating their dad because they're like, I'm so over this. Like, I feel like I'm being pushed to do everything. But like, tell me about that, like having your dad starting this team, and what was it like playing for him?
I mean, I always loved being with my dad, but also there's my dad will always say, I knew nothing and your hitting coach knows everything, because your dad says something to you and you're like, whatever, dad. And then bring the same piece of advice back to him and you're like, oh my gosh, look what I learned today. And he's like, yeah, like I told you that 3 months ago. So there was always that. But I feel like there's either the dad that will baby the kid and always play them because they're the kid, or there's the dad that will actually make your life a lot tougher than if you weren't the coach's kid. And that was my dad. I remember I got kicked out of practice once for back talking. It was during warm-ups we were throwing, and I back talked and my dad was like, yeah, you can go sit in the car.
And let's go. I love that.
Guess who did not back talk in a practice again? I learned from then that he was not dad, he was coach. But I mean, I feel like I played enough sports growing up to where I didn't get burnt out from softball. I'm a firm believer in multi-sport because it just gave me a little break from softball. There was basketball and there was track and there was soccer, and there was always something different. So I feel like that's how I didn't get burned out. And my dad eventually took a step back. He was like, he let the coaches coach and he just enjoyed it from then on. But definitely that tough love parenting. And then he was like, okay, this is out of my hands now.
So he like knew when to back off. I think that's really awesome. My dad was the same. When I started hitting with a hitting coach, he would come and like, there would be multiple cages and he would set up a tee for himself in like the cage next to us and like literally do the drills with us, just because like, he was like, well, if you're learning it, I want to learn it. So I can help teach it. But yeah, he was like all in. But he never, you know, he never stood in and was just like, well, I don't know about this. Or he was just, you know, a sponge. He loved learning. And I think that came from him like coaching as well. Like he just wanted to, you know, just keep learning and always learn. And he still is learning. He loves TikTok.
I love that. I love when someone can be a sponge like that.
Yeah, I think that's necessary, especially if you're coaching young athletes. Like, and he is obviously not a female. He had to learn how to coach girls. And you know, I still definitely felt the tough love, like, you know, especially after games, just me and him in the car, we had a lot to talk about. But yeah, just like your dad, he did a great job of like, on the field, I'm coach, off the field, I'm dad. We're never going to mix the two. That's just not going to work. And yeah, like I think that part, like kind of like you said, it just helps bond with that, like with him. It's like, okay, I really like this side of my dad. You know, yeah. I really like that he's treating me just like he treats everybody on the team. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And we would have the car talks, whatever, the talks after a bad game, but we would still get ice cream afterwards. So it's like, it never dictated, you know, his love. I never felt like he loved me less if I didn't perform. So I think that's like a great attribute to have as a parent, that tough love, but regardless, you're loving your kid.
Yeah. Do you remember how the car ride talks happened for you?
Honestly, I feel like it was just, hey, you obviously made this mistake. You can do better in this, whatever. And it was never like, I feel like I never got yelled at. It was never that deep. It was just, let's get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And would you like take that stuff that maybe you kind of sucked at in that game and go practice it at home? Like, was that kind of how your system worked, or did it just, we'll just figure it out next time?
I'm definitely take it, go practice at home. I'm also quite the perfectionist, and I would sit there filming myself with video, going back and rewatching it, trying to like see my swing. And I think that's what also it makes me a good coach, because I can see little things in people's swings very easily. Mm-hmm. I think that comes from, as a kid, I would always just set up video and just focus on my swing and tweak little things. And I'm always messing with things, and to a fault, sometimes I just need to take a step back and stop messing with things. But I've done it from a young age.
Yeah. I think my dad emphasized, like, we are in pursuit of perfection. Like, we want to become as great as possible in this thing. So yeah, we were constantly taking video, constantly, you know, trying to find ways to get better. But, you know, that, I think that's when I look back at it, the obsession did start kind of early. Do you ever you were like softball obsessed when you were growing up?
Oh yeah. I mean, everything was softball. My grandma makes my birthday cakes, and she made me a softball birthday cake. I would have softball parties. I literally had basically a softball. We entered a tournament with some of my friends, and we just screwed around. We hit left-handed. Like, everything was softball. I'd have the headbands, like my usernames were softball, whatever. I lived, I ate, I breathed softball. Everything was softball.
I love that. Did you ever write a paper in high school or middle school about softball? Because have written so many papers on softball.
Oh my gosh. I'll go back and look at my little assignments and stuff. And I remember I also did an assignment on baseball, like the history of baseball, because there wasn't much information about softball at the time. And I've done so much about softball. And I remember having this dream house layout, like blueprint. And I had a softball field in there in a batting cage, because that was my dream house, was having a softball field.
I have no doubt there's going to be either a cage or a field in your house.
You know, 100%.
Once you graduate. And,
I've thought about those barn to minimums or whatever that they're called. Mm-hmm. Have a cage. Yeah. Don't get me started.
Yeah. I'm already geeking out about, you know, a future home that I want to build with a barn, like all of it. It'll come to life. This is us manifesting the life we want to have later on.
Yeah, we're going to look back on this in 5 years or 10 years. We're going to be like, wow, that was us. And we did it.
That was us. It happened. Now I'm way older than you, so you got time. But I love this so much. So I want to get into your experience at Coastal. So, by the way, shout out to their baseball team. They crushed it this postseason.
Right?
It was so fun.
Yeah, that was really fun to watch. They keep putting Coastal on the map, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So take me through before Coastal. A lot of people, you know, a lot of listeners are either parents who have athletes who want to play in college, or there's athletes listening. You know, from your recruiting journey just to get to Coastal, what was yours like? I'm curious.
Yeah, so I didn't think that I was going to go down south at all. I kind of had this mentality that I can't play in the heat because I sweat a lot and I would get like heat sickness. And that was from a young age. I just got brought up thinking that. So I wanted to do Midwest. Regardless, Midwest people travel down south anyway to play. So I don't know what I was thinking, but I was thinking all Midwest, looking like really Big Ten. That was my goal. And I had a school in the Big Ten that I really thought I was going to. And long story short, September 1st came and they were like only school that didn't call me. And so then I started going visits. And Coastal called me up. They asked me to come on an official visit. I had never heard of Coastal before that summer when they recruited me in Colorado. And I sent them an email because our recruiter was like, hey, send them an email. I'm like, I've never heard of them, but okay, might as well. So this goes to show, no matter who comes, like, send them an email because you never know what's going to happen. But went on the visit. I loved it. I canceled all my other visits after that and committed to Coastal because I'm like, no one's going to beat this offer and location. And it was just, everything was right. And I knew that's where I wanted to be. And 4 years later, having played there for 4 years, I don't regret it a single day.
Oh, that's so special. I hope every athlete gets to find that, you know. Now, from being from the Big Ten, I have to ask what school it was.
I really wanted to go to IU. That was my dream school. Other than Notre Dame, I wanted to go to Notre Dame for so long. That was like ever since I was 8 going to camps, you know the vibe.
Dude, and then you realize it's like all the same
$80,000 a year. And you're like, oh, maybe I should expand my look a little bit.
Who can afford this? I was the same exact way. Now, IU, I guarantee you, is regretting the fact that they did not call you now.
Little fun story, when I was in the portal this year and I get a call from Shauna Stanton and I'm like, wait, what? And then like that just didn't work out for this next year. But it was just so funny. Like, it's like an ex calling you, you know? It's like,
right. It kind of like stings a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I still love IU and they have a great program, but it was funny. And I also went on a visit to Purdue. That was definitely up there in the books.
Spoiler up. Yeah. But I think what's kind of cool is like, so your experience at Coastal obviously led you here, which we are going to talk about, you know, in the next chapter, which we're excited about for you. But, you know, I found probably a very similar situation at Purdue as what you found at Coastal. So it's like, I think athletes are trying to find, like, you know, I don't want to say like the perfect fit, but like a fit that, you know, fits someone else. Like, you found what you needed, right? I found what I needed at Purdue. You know, all the other schools, there were some other ones that were kind of a close second, but, you know, you kind of just find where you feel like you can thrive. And because you thrived at Coastal, now you're going to Georgia, which, like, holy crap, you're moving to the SEC. Like,
can
you take me through that experience of, you know, entering the portal when you did and everything there?
Yeah. So I'll try to make this quick because it felt like the longest stage of my life. But I entered the portal in the fall, just kind of to try to get ahead of things because I like to pre-plan. I don't like to feel like everything's thrown on me, but also trying to lean into more of a type B personality of letting things happen. Like, if it happens, it happens. So I had no clue what I was getting into. Like, I had no clue where I could go because I just came off of shoulder surgery and I knew I was going to be better this year because my strength numbers were off the charts. My overhand velocity, I was hitting 70 and I hadn't hit that before surgery. So it was like, I'm a completely new person post diabetes diagnosis, whatever, being healthy. Like, it's crazy how far that gets you. But I entered the portal having no clue where I was going to go. And I'm like, I can't sell my potential. Like, I know I'm going to be good, but no one else knows I'm going to be good. And so I was looking at a D2 school in the beginning and also some schools and conference. I'd emailed everyone, but no one was really looking at that time. But that made me think
it is a funky time to enter.
Like, no one's looking for grad transfers. And I also hadn't seen someone do it before. Like, that's a weird grad transfer. It's no one really enters in the fall and still playing for their team in the spring. It's a very weird situation. But my coach the whole time she was just very helpful. I would talk to her about every school and be like, do you think this is the right fit? Like, she was like, I love D2. She coached at D2. But she's like, you can do better. Like, you can go more than D2. And like, I kind of thank her for seeing my worth. And I didn't end up going on that visit because she's like, you will have other offers. So I was patient.
She knows you. She spent 4 years with you.
Right. And I appreciate her for that. In January, I went on an official visit with Purdue because that I was back home for Christmas and they were like one of the first schools, the first bigger school to email me and stuff. Loved it. Honestly, if I didn't get any other offers, I would have been perfectly fine going to Purdue.
You would have had my full support.
Oh, I bet. And it was close to home. And my sisters are growing up and I have a nephew now. So it's like, that was very enticing. But then started doing really well in season, and we played UNC and I did well against them. And then they hit me up. They're like, hey, like I had a double and a triple, and like I just balled out against UNC. Went on a visit to UNC. Loved it. We played South Carolina and I balled out again, and went on a visit to South Carolina, and I thought I was going to South Carolina. Like that was, I was convinced I was going to South Carolina and nothing could beat that. And then Georgia hit me up, like, I feel like before I was going to commit to South Carolina, and you're like, hey, you should come out on a visit. And it was this random, we couldn't even get a flight because I had to be back from to an awards ceremony. And so I drove the 5 hours there and back. It was a quick, like not even 24 hour visit. And I did not think they were going to beat South Carolina. And I came back the last 5 hours or the 5 hours from Georgia and didn't play any music. I was just driving down the road, really contemplating, because I'm like, wow, I did not think they were going to even put up a fight. And now I'm considering going to Georgia. And that was the longest week of my life because they gave me a week to decide. And wow. I was like, I also loved the South Carolina coaches and everything. And I'm like, wow, like this is the hardest decision I've ever had to make. But it's also, it was a great decision. And oh my gosh, that's like, they were so good this year and they have such a good coaching staff, and she just got coach of the year. So I was like, wow. And I respect her greatly. So that was very hard phone call to make, but ultimately decided Georgia, and I'm so excited.
I'm so excited for you. The new facilities that they have.
Yeah. It's insane. Wild. Like you don't see that in the softball world. Like you rarely even see that in the baseball world. Baseball doesn't even have that nice of facility. So I'm excited. Going there in person, it's just as pretty as the cool videos that they make. I'm like, wow, this is real. Oh, and putting on the jersey. I've never had a jersey fit so good. Because I wore Purdue's Nikes. I wore UNC's Nikes. But the Nikes that Georgia had, I'm like, what is this magical feeling? I feel like I'm wearing Lululemon leggings, and I'm like, this is nice. So yeah, everything just, I think the vibe was right for Georgia. And my gut was just telling me Georgia, even though it was such an even split between South Carolina and Georgia.
I love how humble you are, where you enter the portal and you're like, well, you know, if it's a D2, we'll go D2. But like, I think what we need to kind of talk about too is the fact that, again, you entered in a funky time, but your coach was like all on board for this grad transfer. You know, my sister, who ironically played at UNC, she was also a grad transfer and transferred to Michigan to play her final season, which happened to be Hutch's final season. So like insane. But, you know, grad transfers, that used to be the only people in the portal.
Yeah.
Like mostly were grad transfers. So I just want people who hate the portal to understand, like, the portal is a really good thing for a lot of people. So the situation that you were in to become a grad transfer, like what was the reason why you wanted to leave initially? Just because I think people need to know, like, what was the reason? Because it obviously wasn't the fact that your coaches weren't great, because you loved your coaches at Coastal.
Yeah. Honestly.
So what made you enter?
Yeah. I feel like if I didn't have to leave, I wouldn't have, because I also love my team. It was the most fun I've ever had this year. Great team. We had a great season and it was so fun. So leaving is so bittersweet, but I already did an undergrad in exercise science and I wanted to get a master's in exercise science, but Coastal didn't have that. So I got the undergrad in 3 years. So I had an extra year. So I was like, let me just get the 1 year MBA. So I did the MBA. And so I already got a master's that I didn't particularly care for or need. Obviously it's very helpful and I'm super thankful for it, but I'm like, I can't do another degree that I don't want to do it in. Cause I care about academics so much. Like I pride myself in my academics. And I also love exercise science. So that was ultimately the deciding factor, was I need to get a degree that I want to get. And I want to go into coaching. So I don't need a master's in anything specific, but it being an exercise science, and I see how much exercise science can play a role in softball and just the holistic like expertise and view of softball. It helps so much. And I've grown so much as an athlete with the program. So I decided I want to get an exercise science master's. I'll be doing biomechanics at Georgia. And I'm so excited to be studying something that I want to study, because this MBA was kind of grueling. A lot of busy work and a lot of business. And
you weren't passionate about that
at all.
Yeah. I'm excited for you. So I was a sports performance major. So very similar, exercise science, kinesiology, all of it. Biomechanics, love that stuff so much. And it really makes a difference when you study the thing that you love. So I'm really glad that you're able to take that now to this next level, because as also a hitting coach, it's like the things that you can see, because you know which muscles are firing when, it's so much easier to explain it to an athlete. And especially if you want them to feel a certain way, it's like, you know how to tell them that to make it
for
happen.
Sure.
So
for sure. And yeah. Also kind of similar to your dad, I thinking about teaching someone, I learned how to swing left-handed. Like I taught myself how to swing left-handed to kind of re-go through the process of learning something and kind of ask the same questions that my athletes ask and feel the same things and find the same points that are difficult to learn. And same thing with exercise science. It helps you be able to take a complex language and put it in layman's terms. And that is a skill to be able to communicate effectively, I feel like.
It totally is. And I can't wait for you to start teaching that stuff on the internet too, because you're all over TikTok and everything. And I'm going to be reposting it. I know I am, because you're going to be able to explain it in ways people can understand it. You should really consider making, do you have a YouTube channel too?
I don't.
In the future, when you're not so busy, okay, like post playing, I think a YouTube channel would be clutch, just because like you can actually make longer videos, you can save it. And you can, knowing the knowledge that you have, you can monetize so much from it. But anyway, we can talk business later.
I was going to say, I have so many ideas. I was actually talking with my boyfriend this morning about the next side quest that I want. And I'm like, do I start it now? But I'm like, I have so much going on. No. I need to hold on. Wait.
Yeah. Okay. So another thing that I really caught from your story of the transfer portal, before we start going into some other topics, it's really cool to have that motivation of like, okay, I'm looking for my next school. Did you use that motivation to like go ball out against these great teams, like that you could see yourself playing at? Like, was there a motivation there to just go have fun and ball out?
So there was definitely a pressure of performing at a higher level, because I knew I needed to get good stats this season. But also I think almost the knowledge that I am no one until I prove myself, it helped relax me, because I knew I had to go into the season. I couldn't be stressing my stats and I couldn't be stressing the outcomes, because I've tried to do that for 3 years and it didn't work out for me. So I actually went into this season thinking, this is my senior season. This is the last year I get to play with these girls. I'm going to be loose, have fun. I'm not expecting to transfer anywhere big. I just want to have fun, and I want to perform at the level that I know how, because I've worked so hard for it. And I had to constantly work at forgetting the pressure and just doing it for me. And I think that helped so much, because it would be so easy to go into the UNC game being like, oh, I want to transfer here. Let me try to ball out. But I had to really just think like, let me just play my game. And it ended up working out so well, because I was loose and I was having fun, and just with the girls on the field, we were joking. It was just so unserious. And a big thing that I also do, I don't look at my stats in season. It's really hard, because they're posted everywhere. And when you go back and watch ESPN, there's that little strip underneath, but I literally block it with my hand. I'm like, I'm not looking at my stats, because I'm such a perfectionist to my core, where I can let that eat me up. So I have to choose to not even look at it. So I didn't know my batting average the entire season, and ended up batting .371. And I knew I was doing pretty good, but that was a nice little surprise. It was Christmas at the end of the season.
I love that. And you knew you were doing well, because you felt like you were able to just play free, you know? And I think a lot of people that look at their stats too much, they get into the numbers in their head. and it just affects everything. But the fact that you were just balling out, having fun with your teammates, like just playing the game that you know how to play, is the exact reason why Georgia called you. Like, so I think people that try to just like force things, nothing will ever happen the way you want it to happen if you force it, you know?
At all. But, like I said, tried that for 3 years, didn't work out the way I wanted.
Yeah. Now, have you played at Georgia before? Have you ever played at their field?
No, no. We did play them in regionals though at Duke, but
yeah,
that was a fun one. Yep.
I will say, I'm going to warn you, okay? Because I have a story about Georgia from when I was at Purdue. So they had just built this massive Jumbotron when I was playing there. And on the Jumbotron, so we played them early in the season because we couldn't play in Indiana for obvious reasons. So we're down there, it's hot. And I look up at the stat, like, so it has your name and then next to your name is your stats. Okay. So you're going to have to just never look at that, first of all. I didn't realize I was like hitting like over 400 going into this series. Okay. I was like, I don't know what it was. It was like, I think I was hitting like 415. Like, it was insane. Yeah. I'm not even a slapper at the time. It's just wild numbers. Okay.
Yeah.
I look at that stat and I'm like, that's huge. You know, I had no idea that I was doing that well. And I've actually shared this story on the podcast, but this is more fun telling you this story. But that whole weekend, I just kept watching that stat. And so actually my first at bat, I hit a line drive right to somebody and they caught it. And then I literally saw the number just go, go down. And I'm like, oh, dang it. Even though like I hit it well, like, why am I mad?
Right.
And the whole weekend, I'm literally looking at that dang thing and I was hitting under 400 by the end of the weekend because I just could not get my eyes off of that or stop thinking about my numbers.
So real. That, I feel like I've had a similar situation. Like, beginning of the season, you're doing great. And then you realize, oh, I'm doing great. And then you start thinking about that and obsessing over that number. And then, like, even immediately after the hit, I remember I would think, oh, my batting average is going down. And I'm like, why? Right. It was a quab. Like, why are we thinking about that?
Yeah. Quab is quality at bat, by the way, for those listening. yeah, no, it's such a real thing. It's like whenever we, you know, try too hard, we end up sucking instead of just like, okay, play the game you know how to play. Things will work out the way they need to. So that's my fun Georgia story.
Exactly.
I don't have any others, but I needed to tell you it.
I hope I have a different one.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to warn you about the stats that are up there. Yeah. I don't even know if they put Georgia's stats up there. Maybe, honestly, the whole weekend, I'm like, they're doing this on purpose. They're making me, like, overthink. And here we were.
It's such a head game. That would be a strategy, for sure.
Yeah. For all of you that have teams, you should just do it. Just put up everybody's stats.
Do that. Overthink. Like, really big.
Yeah. Now, I will say, I did bounce back after that. I had a long discussion with my coach about knowing my stats. And he's like, I will never tell you your stats. And I need you to literally just do what you were doing prior to Georgia. Let's just take that off.
Right.
Our mind.
I had to talk to everyone. I was like, my roommates, because my roommate was a pitcher and she obsessed over her stats. I was like, I know you watch every game back. Do not ever tell me my stats. And there was one time I heard, like, I was leading the team in stolen bases and I was ranked nationally and I'm not like a fast girl. Like, I mean, I'm fast and I'm aggressive, but I've never been known to be a base dealer. And I was like, what? But then I was like, why'd you tell me that? Now I'm going to be thinking about that.
Now you're going to overthink. Should I go? Heck? Like,
yeah. Right.
That's so funny. It's funny that you mentioned IU because I have a similar story from IU where, apparently I was like, I had a 16 game hitting streak and I didn't know it. And then our SID came up to me and was like, hey, Ash, like, congrats. You have a 16-game hitting streak.
Oh.
Do you think I had a 17?
And it stopped at 16.
I did. Nope. It did. I had a walk that game, but that doesn't help. So.
At all.
Yeah.
At all.
Not great. Wendy?
If you're out there, the people listening, if someone is on a streak or they're doing really well, just keep that to yourself. They probably know that they're doing well. Don't give a number to it because, I hate when it will end. Walks up. We've had people jinx perfect games before, jinx no hitters. It's like 101 of softball is when things are going well, don't say it.
Yeah, don't talk about it. Don't make them think. Like, now they're going to, like, force things. Yeah, not good. Okay, so you have been injured a lot. Like, a lot more than the average person. Okay. We don't have to go over why you got injured or really how, but a lot of people have been injured, you know, like got an ACL tear, shoulder, elbow, all the things happen in softball. Anything could happen. We don't have to reminisce over every injury, but can you talk about how you have become more resilient because of injury? Because I think that is the common thing when I hear, you know, somebody gets injured, they always come out stronger. And I feel like you're one of those athletes who has. Like, at the beginning, were you feeling that way? Was it hard at first? What got you into becoming stronger physically and mentally later because of it?
Yeah. So for those who don't know, my little injury resume, if you will, I've had 3 knee surgeries, one of them being an ACL. So that's a big one. And then a shoulder surgery, rotator cuff and labrum. And then also 2 weeks after I got diagnosed with diabetes. So I'm not a stranger to a challenge, but I feel like that's exactly what injuries are. They're just a challenge. And I think being an athlete kind of gives you an advantage because we're so used to seeing a challenge as just trying to problem solve our way through it and figuring out how to get through it. So I think that we kind of come at it from an athlete mindset, but that also doesn't go to say that it isn't difficult and extremely frustrating in the beginning. Every time I get injured, I mean, there's always a lot of tears. It's always so frustrating, especially working so hard in the second, third, fourth injury. It's like, I just rehabbed this and I just spent a year working on this and the time and the PT and in the athletic training room. And there's so much that goes into it. But with every negative thing and every setback, I think it's just an opportunity for so much growth. And I think it can eat people up, but just viewing it as a challenge and looking forward to the growth that you can have and setting goals and setting little goals so you can constantly be achieving something. Like, oh, I want to straighten my knee like a degree further today. And then that's a win. I think setting process-based goals for that has helped me a bunch. And I mean, it's just like softball, like setting little goals and little things that you can succeed in. It makes it so much more enjoyable. But also having great support systems, I wouldn't be able to be where I am without my family and my friends and my boyfriend. And like, everyone's just, they want to see you succeed. And sometimes it doesn't always feel like that, but it truly is the case. And it's just a challenge. It's just a hurdle. And oftentimes, like there were times where I thought I plateaued and then I got injured and I came back even stronger. So I think it just goes to show that injury can, it's not good and no one wants to get injured, but you can come back so much stronger from it. And it is really frustrating, extremely frustrating, but it's just another challenge and you get so much mentally stronger too. And just another thing real quick, like when you get injured, it's an opportunity to see the game from another side. So when I got shoulder surgery, I was on the bench the entire year and got to see things from a coaching perspective, which just increases your game knowledge so much when you can see things from the other side. So when you go back on the field, you think of everything. It's a blessing and a curse, but just focus on the blessing part of it and you'll be all good.
Mm-hmm. So my sister that played at UNC broke her hand like the second week of her freshman year. Like, and she said, she came on the podcast and she said exactly what you just said about how she was out the entire year. And she's like, she's now in coaching, ironically.
Oh.
And she was like, I've learned more about the outfield from just watching and like being in the corner of my outfielders, seeing things that maybe they couldn't see, talking the game. She's like, learned that I could actually be a decent coach because of this experience. But also she's like, I got so much better as an outfielder, even though I didn't even touch the field for a year. So
100%.
Like, yeah. And like, you've obviously dealt with that multiple times, but I just want those athletes to know that like, you feel like you're not helping your game because that's a mindset. Like if you're hurt and you attack it with like, okay, what can I do? And you're, you know, watching reps, you know, helping in any way you can, you're actually making everybody around you better, even though you're in this funky situation that obviously no one wants to be in.
For sure.
But you kind of make the most of it.
Yeah. And it also challenges you perspective because you can be that person on the bench who people come to when they're in a slump or they're struggling. And that's what I turned into. I felt like I was a player coach where I would just talk people through their at bats and from a judgment free zone. And it helped my verbal leadership when I couldn't be a physical leader. And I think that is just such a cool thing to be able to do. And it helps you grow so much, and becoming that person that people lean on then helped the next season when I was out on the field. Everyone could still come talk to me. And you could also see things that people do that you're like, okay, I see how this affects people when people act this way. So I'm never going to act that way. You just see things from a completely different perspective.
That's so awesome. I have to ask, when was the first time you got injured? And did all these injuries lead you to wanting to study exercise science? Or is that just happenstance?
Yeah, I got injured junior year. I tore my ACL. Well, that's not the first time I got injured. I tore my PCL freshman year of high school in basketball, but then tore my ACL, first surgical injury, junior year of basketball. And I feel like I've lived in a PT clinic. I've had UCL problems in my elbow. I've had everything. And so seeing that from the physical therapy side, I'm like, oh, this is really cool. Like helping someone get back to normal after an injury. And so I wanted to do PT for the longest time. And then I realized they work a lot with geriatric populations. And I love older people, but I also love working with athletes and people who are really motivated. So I was like, how can I stay in the sport and whatever? And then I learned exercise science was a program that I could go into. And I'm like, you mean I get to learn about the science behind playing softball? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Yes. And I loved going to class every day. The injury management class. Oh my gosh. And like I was basically just checking off like, yeah, turf toe. Yep. Achilles tendonitis. Yep. Patellar tendonitis. Yep. Biceps. Like, I'm like, yeah, I know all these injuries because I've had every single one of them. I joke that it's my clinical experience.
That's so great. Did you ever take like a sports psychology class?
Yes. And I almost double majored in psych because I love sports psych. And those were honestly my favorite classes. I could nerd out in sports psych all day because especially for softball and baseball, we are such a mental sport and you could have the best fundamentals, but if you're not right in the head, you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have so much knowledge and experience that like, no wonder you have a podcast. Like this all just makes sense. You have like, I need to share this information with people.
I just like to yap, you know, and I feel like I've experienced so many negative things, not to sound pick me or whatever. I've experienced a lot of challenges to the point where I've conquered them and I want to share my experience with people. So A, they don't have to go through these challenges, or if B, they do go through these challenges, they see a healthy way to overcome them. And I think that's my field experience is been there, done that.
Yeah, it makes you a better coach because you can physically say, I have been there. Like I have been in your shoes on so many different things.
Yeah.
And it's probably rare when something happens and you're like, oh, I haven't experienced that. Like that probably rarely happens.
Also, being a utility, I feel like I've played everywhere in the field. Literally everywhere. I didn't catch or pitch in college, but I have done both of those. And I played almost everywhere else in college. Third for a whole season, first for a whole season, second for a whole season. But then I also practiced in the outfield the entire fall. And I played shortstop for a game. And I feel like that just adds to the field experience of being a coach. Like I have had to learn and relearn things from every position. So yeah, put me out there. Put me in, coach.
Yeah. Well, no wonder why you're getting all these calls also like from coaches when you're in the transfer portals. Like she can do it all. Like she can fill any gaps that we have. Like, no,
versatile. I just want to hit.
Yeah. Being versatile matters. It truly does. Especially if you're young, looking to play in college. It's like you need to have experience all over the field because I went in as an outfielder and never touched the outfield. I was a second baseman for 2 years and a first baseman for 2 years, but it meant I played. So that's all that really mattered to me. But yeah, that's so cool. Like, well, maybe I'll ask you this at the end, but do you have an idea of where Georgia wants you to play when you get there?
They're thinking right side, but it's also, they're like, I mean, nothing is guaranteed. You have to work for it, which I love. If someone were to tell me that I have a guaranteed spot, I don't know if I would like that because I've seen places where people are automatically given a position and someone's outworking them and outperforming them. And I feel like it's fair. And that's how I want it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're going to get at Georgia. What sure. led you to wanting to play, you know, for him? Because I think whenever he has interviews, I'm like, dang, he's so smart. Like, what was it that really attracted you to this coaching staff?
Well, I knew of them and I knew they were very renowned, great coaches, but I didn't really know anything else. And going on the visit, I had the most natural, intellectual conversations that I was like, I love this. Like, we were at dinner the first night and we were just talking about everything sports science and like books that we read. And like, it was such a vibe. And I'm like, these coaches are, I can see myself playing under them. And I just, the whole vibe was awesome. And they're such great people and funny people. And I'm like, yeah, I think this is where I'm meant to be.
Oh, I can't wait to see you perform. It's going to be so fun. The last thing I want to hit on with you is your diabetes. And I just learned that you had just figured out that you have type 1 diabetes. What was it like getting the news? Did it make sense? Like, in a lot of things prior to that, you're like, oh, well, I wish I would have known this like longer. But just take me through that, because there are a lot of athletes that play with type 1 diabetes and it is a huge challenge. And I would love to hear your insight on it.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to make a spark notes of this, because this could be a whole podcast episode on itself. But
well, essentially, we can do that too.
I had been dealing with the symptoms for like 2 years up till I got diagnosed, and I just didn't know it. And as an athlete, you're typically like, oh, I'm dehydrated and drinking all the time and peeing all the time. Oh, it's because I'm an athlete. Like, oh, I have blobs in my vision. Probably just need to drink some water. I don't know. It's so funny thinking back now. I'm like, wow, I really was diabetic and I just didn't know. But yeah, I had all these symptoms and then it got really bad. I lost 17 pounds from January to February, March of 2024. Whoa. And I was going into season and I was packing the protein. I was eating a lot. Something about me, I love to eat. So should not be losing 17 pounds in a month. And that was when it got really bad. My blood sugar was really high. I got surgery having really high blood sugar, which looking back at it now was so dangerous. I'm so lucky that my outcomes are the way they are. But the timing, if anything, was good, because 2 weeks after surgery, I got diagnosed and I'm already out of softball. So I have all this time to figure it out. And so it was kind of a blessing that it happened the way it did. And I ended up, yeah, it's a big learning curve. And the athletes with type 1 know how it adds so many more decisions into your day. And now I have these devices that help me out, but technology is technology and it doesn't always work and it malfunctions and you still have to count your carbs and take insulin for every gram of carb. And if you get high, you feel this type of way. And if you get low, you could pass out. And all these times before I got diagnosed where I was feeling crappy and I just didn't know. It's so much better being healthy now and understanding this is what this is and this is what this is and having a solution to it, because I didn't realize I wasn't reaching my potential because I had this limiting factor. I thought maybe I just plateaued, even though I was working so hard. It was incredibly frustrating to not see the gains that I wanted to. But being healthy is a completely different story. And I act like I have it all figured out, but every day is a new one and it has its own challenges and it's extremely frustrating at times. Sometimes I feel like I have it all figured out, but I feel like that's just type 1 in a nutshell. Is some days you feel like you know everything and some days you feel like you know nothing. It's a big roller coaster and there's so many factors and everything. You learn a lot about yourself though.
Mm. I think you just described parenting with that last part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because yeah, you have your days where you feel like you're killing it and you have days where you're like, who signed me up for this? Like,
right.
This, I don't know if I can do this.
See, I'll be ready.
But wow. Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you're telling this too. I just watched, it's bad that I watched so many videos, but some of them like make sense. They say like why men love golf is because every shot is a new problem. So it's like, and as athletes, like we're always almost, I don't want to say we're hunting for problems, but like it keeps us, you know, I don't know what the word is. And I've never had type 1 diabetes, so I can't fully relate. But it's like, you know, when you have this thing and you're figuring it out, like there's a type of confidence that that's
for sure
probably going to give you, like that, you know, I can handle this. I can do this.
Yeah.
That, you know, that resiliency piece, you have more of it than most of us, not just because you have diabetes, but because you got injured at home too.
Yeah. I feel like anytime you can overcome something, it gives your brain a sense of achievement, and there's probably some dopamine that comes with it. And it's nice to know you can handle a hard challenge. Like to me, I've gained so much more confidence knowing that I've handled diabetes and injuries and all this stuff. It's especially having something that is such a large challenge and conquering it day to day. It makes all the other challenges so much more minuscule. And it's like, oh, I used to worry about these things. They do not faze me now. Like little day to day challenges, whatever. When you can overcome something large like diabetes or an injury, it gives you a sense of confidence in overcoming anything. I'm like, if I can do diabetes, I can overcome anything. I say the same with CrossFit. If I can get through a CrossFit workout, I can get through any workout. Like, this is hard. Like, overcoming hard things. And I just read a book called Do Hard Things. And it just, it's why I run a mile every day. I'm not a runner. Mm-hmm. But doing a hard thing every day makes what used to be hard seem easier. And I think it's just such a cool part of growth, like seeing where you get in a year, in 2 years, and just not limiting yourself and understanding that you can do anything that you put your mind to, put your priorities to. It's very empowering. And I wish more people would understand the power they hold and their potential. And that's ultimately my goal with the podcast, is to help young females understand that they can do anything and they don't have to have diabetes or get injured to do it.
Oh my gosh. I have goosebumps like hearing you talk about this. Like that is, you know, I don't even want to ask the rapid fire now. I just want to end it with what you just said.
Mic drop.
But yes, please tell people a little bit more about Like a Girl, your podcast, and where they can also follow you and your journey, because that's how I found you. And I am obsessed with your work now. Like, I just love how much you're, you know, you're just not just teaching the physical game, but the mental piece, the confidence piece, the, you know, determination, the resiliency. Like, I see it all in just your posts. I can't imagine how much deeper you go on your podcast, too.
For sure. My podcast is Like a Girl. I have an Instagram for the podcast is likeagirl_pod. And then my Instagram is just Kirsten Roos. My name is hard to spell, so you might want to check the podcast episode, because I know Ashley's going to get it right. She's not going to.
Yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes.
Instagram, Twitter. I'm not really on Twitter much. TikTok is my big thing. I post a lot of softball content, and I want to get more into the mental content side of things. Content has been my big focus this summer, as well as finishing up my MBA and working out and doing everything and trying to be a superwoman.
You are superwoman.
My thing, and I'm trying day by day. But yeah, that's why I do the podcast. Try to help people. Try to be superwoman too.
Yeah, and because she is also getting ready for a collegiate season, I'm sure there's going to be ebbs and flows on when we can expect episodes. But girl, you 100%. Take your time on those. I can't imagine being in your shoes and having a podcast.
Yeah, sometimes I do them weekly. Sometimes it's, I'm moving from Miami to South Carolina to Athens within 3 days. And then I have to furnish my apartment in Athens now. And I have to acclimate and find a place to shoot. And yeah, so I want to shoot a podcast before I move, because I know it's going to be a little bit while I get acclimated. So be on the lookout. Yeah, I'll be getting one together before I move.
Good deal. All of those links that she just talked about, you can find in the show notes. Yes, with the correct spelling. I was joking earlier. I said I texted her and it spelled her name with an E at the end after the T instead of an I. And like it did autocorrect. I'm like, oh, crap. Like, that's so unprofessional to send the wrong.
Autocorrect is everyone's worst nightmare.
Oh, my goodness. But it's unique, just like you, which I love. I would love to do a rapid fire with you. So just like quick questions, kind of about your experience, especially, you know, strength training, which you love, that I've noticed. But let's start this. What is your favorite hitting drill right now for you personally, not just teaching it?
Honestly, I love, I call it Ortiz. It's where you get into a single leg position, go get some separation, feeling the coil, and then exploding through. I love working single leg, back leg work because oftentimes we like to get on our front leg. So I like that.
Facts. I like that too. What is your favorite movement in the weight room? Like if you could do this all day, you just love it.
Squat all day. I got some big quads.
Even to failure? Let's go.
Oh, for sure. Whenever I see a squat in a workout, I'm like, yeah, I'm there.
Mm-hmm. Like load it up. I'm going to
A clean. I love hang cleans, but with the shoulder and the wrist, sometimes I can't do them.
Correct. And I obviously need to know your least favorite movement because I feel like I have more of those than I have favorites.
Yeah. You know, I go with pull-ups, but I'm doing them often enough to where I'm trying to make them my favorite movement because I'm getting better at them. And it's fun to like get better at something I suck at. But if I can add running into that, I'm adding running into my least favorite movement.
Yeah. But that's why you do it every day. I love that. Like do hard things every day.
Yeah,
exactly. Mine is a Bulgarian split squat. I hate those.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I actually kind of oddly like them. I'm psychotic like that.
Yeah, I just never. Maybe it's because like my legs are super long. I don't know. Like
you're taller though. Yeah, I'm short and compact. So like, there's something to you're way be said about the levers and
yeah. Even the squat. Like I'm okay with like a front squat. I loved back squat for a while, but I do have to travel so far to get into a deep squat. It's rough. I can definitely not put on as much weight.
It's nice being closer to the ground.
I know. We had a catcher who, she lifted crazy, like crazy numbers, probably what you're lifting. And I would like be lucky to get half of those numbers on my on my bar. I'm like, I just have to remember, like, I'm my own person. I'm not comparing myself.
Exactly.
But
we all have different strengths and they all translate into the game differently.
Mm-hmm. 100%. So because you've played all the positions, is there a favorite that you have played?
I feel like I'm a natural third baseman. I love third. Say I have a healthy shoulder and I can throw all the time, third base.
Mm-hmm. Good deal. Okay, these last two might be a little bit longer answers, so we can kind of forget about the rapid fire piece. But what's a highlight from your experience at Coastal that you'll just never forget?
Honestly, other than the fun team moments and stuff, I think the greatest feeling I ever had was hitting a home run my first at bat. I led off for Coastal first game against Purdue, actually. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And freshman me leading off, I hit a home run, and specifically seeing the video, not the video from ESPN, but a video my stepmom took, and she panned over to my dad, and my dad got up and like yelled. It gives me goosebumps every time because he's not a very like verbal person. He's very poker face, doesn't show emotions. So to see him yell like that, I was like, that was an I made it moment for sure.
That's so special. And I think I remember seeing that video. I think I commented on it on TikTok of the home run. So everybody go watch it. It was pretty sick. I didn't know about the dad part though. So I'm going to have to go.
Like, maybe I'll have to like post a video. I don't think I ever posted that video because no one would really understand the significance except for me.
Yeah.
It's a sweet one.
Home run was posted, right? I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. I live off of that. Legit. That's my glory day.
You know what sucks about being 32 is that like nothing was saved. Like all of our video, there's nothing. I can't find anything of mine.
That is so unfortunate.
I'm glad you guys have so many
cool videos. Yeah. It's so bittersweet seeing like people under like younger girls getting all these things. And you're like, yeah, I'm really happy for you, but I wish I had that too.
Yeah. And I mean, as somebody who played professional softball for a couple of years, I'm like, dang, right. I'm just glad y'all are getting paid. Like, that's great.
Right. It's like, I walked so you could run.
I guess. But it is pretty cool to see the evolution of the game. It's pretty spectacular in every way, which you obviously see a ton with exercise science. Like, it's wild. All of the things that
I love it.
Not just the game of softball, but just like any athlete are able to have now.
It's pretty cool. So you talked about your relationship with your dad. I want to know, this is my last question for you, so it can be as long of an answer as you need it to be, but let me know what you would want to say to your dad now that you're older, now that you're more mature than you were when you were younger, when he was coaching you. Like, what do you want to say to him based on like the experience and where you are now, to maybe thank him or just share a piece of appreciation?
I feel like as I'm older, I appreciate what he did so much, because you look back and see the things your dad did, and at the time maybe they annoyed you, or and I feel like girls often, they get upset with their dad if they're like pushing them, but I feel like all dads just want us to succeed so much. So if I could just go back and thank my dad for pushing me and also keeping me humble and showing me that life isn't just softball, like being a kind person outside of softball is the way to go. Like, he was the type of person, like someone, I always saw him doing kind things for people. Someone came up to us at a gas station and they're like, can I have $5 for gas? I just need to get home. And he just filled up her tank. Like, she had a kid in the backseat. Like, he just filled up her tank. He would plow driveways for some extra cash. And he sees an older lady out there shoveling, and he's like, absolutely not. Like, go inside. I'll plow your driveway. Like, I've grown up seeing him do these selfless acts and also not like posting about it and just being a kind person. And I think I love seeing both sides, the tough side, but also be a good person, you know? So I thank him for that.
Well, dad has raised a pretty awesome person. This exceeded every expectation that I had for this interview. Maybe it's because we're Midwesterners. We live close to, by each other.
We're connected.
I don't know. We vibe, we click. Now I'm going to have to say, you're going to have to come back on and come to my studio that I do live interviews with in South Bend. Like, later, after you crush it this season at Georgia. But I would love to do a sit down and kind of just like keep hashing some of these topics. But man, there were so many great gems. I am stoked to watch you play at Georgia. Like, this is going to be so fun for us all to watch. Because if you play as free as you did your final season at Coastal, like, we're about to get a show from you this year.
For sure. I hope so. I've been working too hard for it not to go up.
And you're just going to learn more and more, you know, from this 100%. New program. So excited for you. And thanks again for coming on. This has been a treat for all of us.
No, thank you for having me. This has been super fun. And I can't wait to get to know you more, too.
As you probably could tell, we could have talked for hours. And I already can't wait to get her back for a live interview when she's home after her season at Georgia. And we're already talking about running some clinics together in Northern Indiana. So you guys that live close, stay tuned. In the show notes, I've dropped all the ways to follow Kirsten and her podcast, along with a few episodes where we discuss overcoming injuries, if you happen to be in that boat right now, from my sister's experience breaking both of her hands within a year, Delaney Spaulding's inspiring story of tearing her ACL in early 2020, but getting a full recovery just in time for the Tokyo Olympics in 2021. And also tune in to an interview with Jennifer Schwartz talking about injury prevention and so much more. I try to hit all the topics on the podcast, and these are just a few of them that if you're in this boat, you're definitely going to want to listen. If you enjoyed this interview, please share it with a friend or two. And if you love the podcast, please take a minute to write me a review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. It, one, encourages me to put together more interviews with great guests like Kirsten, and two, helps boost the rating of this podcast and share it with more softball-obsessed people like us. I appreciate you taking the time to listen, and don't forget to stay awkward, stay humble, and keep smiling. This world definitely needs it. I'll see you next week.